Welcome to the SPS Digital Learning Hour, brought to you by the Digital Learning and Assessment Department. We're coming to you today from a conference room in Central Office, bringing the latest news in Springfield Public Schools in regards to technology, along with inspiring interviews from teachers who are using technology in the classroom. I am your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy. You can find me out on all the socials at Bearded Tech Ed, or you can go to my website, beardedtechedguy.com, or the MySPS We Learn page, where we have the blog, and this podcast is also hosted there too. We thank you for, again, joining us. It's been fun getting back into the swing of things and getting into podcasting again and coming back out with everything that we are doing. So I thank you for those of you who have held out there to listen. Awesome. Make sure that you're sharing it and letting people know that we are back and we are up and running. So a few quick announcements from the district here. We are looking for inputs about renaming Homer Street School in honor of Representative Ben Swan. There's a great write-up. You can check it out to hear why we think this might be a great idea. So let us know what you think. Also, as SPS employees, we get Dell offers from time to time, and there is a discount link posted out in the news and announcements on MySPS. And again, please make sure that you are following all of the safety protocols for COVID. There is just another reminder there. College Fridays are here. Make sure you wear your favorite college or the college you went to gear so that we can help spread the love of what colleges can do. Also, make sure that you're getting up to date with your Safe Schools and Vector Solutions annual training. So we thank you for that. If you are looking for the latest blog post, we actually finally just got it out. It is all about just starting the year off and some of the things that we're excited to talk about. Some upcoming ones, we're going to talk about Word and PowerPoint and a new feature in Teams. These are three different blog posts that will be coming out soon, and so we hope that you stick around for those too. Make sure that you follow us out on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook for any of the latest information. Coming up next is our interview of the week. For this week's interview of the week, we met with educator Lori Spiro Pioge over at Beale Elementary. And when I say over, I mean we were still remote, and so we talked through the computer for our interview. Just a couple of things to note. With it being Zoom, there's a couple times where audio kind of cut out. I tried to make sure that if the what was being said was not really legible or understandable, I kind of cut that out. So you will hear a couple of drops in the middle, but don't worry, that's just due to the fact that we were recording on Zoom, and I think both of us were probably not plugged in or hardwired in, I guess would be the better way to say it. Otherwise, listen to this awesome interview.
My name is Lori Spiro Pioge. I work at Beale School now. I started teaching in 1997, teaching Spanish in middle school in Chicopee, and I did that for 3 years. When I came to Springfield, I did ESL, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade at Rebecca Johnson, and I only did that for a year, and then I moved down because it went from a K-8 school to a K-5, and I taught 2nd grade. And then I taught 1st grade, and then I taught 2nd grade and 5th grade in the same year. They moved me because of the dynamics in the classroom. And I came to Beale in 2005 and teaching 5th grade, and then ELA and social studies and writing. And then after that, I was lucky enough to get the position of the science teacher.
Wow. So you really, in your teaching experience, have really gone the gamut from foreign language to ESL to different parts of grade levels and subjects within some of those grade levels. And I understand the whole dynamics of having to move grades in the middle of the year. While I didn't have to, we kept losing teachers due to various different things for my fifth grade partner at the school I was at. So I totally understand that one. So in those early years of teaching, especially because you were talking about teaching Spanish at Chicopee, when I was in middle school, I learned that because the internet was just starting to become a thing at the same time that you would have been teaching, I was in middle school. So I learned that on the internet, there was programs like Babelfish that would take my English and translate it to Spanish for me so that I could complete all my assignments. Now, did you, in your early time of teaching, did you ever run into things that were similar to that with technology, or were the students mostly not using technology in general?
Technology, when I was a teacher there, I was lucky enough to get a pilot program. They were trying to get teachers on technology. And so I did my master's degree in educational technology. So I was really their first technology teacher, even back then. Mm-hmm. I had never been on the internet before the program. I had to buy a computer, one of those Gateway huge monster computers that cost you $1 million, and to do my master's program, because I didn't have a computer before that. But I completed the master's, and as I was doing it, I used my Spanish kids and got them onto PowerPoint. They had to do a PowerPoint presentation, and that's where my technology really started.
That's awesome. So yeah, it's amazing to think that PowerPoint, some of these programs that we use now are still like very popular and have made such improvements over the last number of years. So
yeah,
I'm sure you've definitely seen that with your teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So in jumping around from ESL to the younger grade levels, did you find that even at Rebecca Johnson, you were still like getting just into using technology, or was it a lot of overheads and the transparencies and?
A lot of overheads and transparencies. I didn't really use technology. The technology wasn't really available. I think we had one computer in our classroom, but we didn't really put kids on it like we do now. Maybe for typing, they had a computer lab at Rebecca Johnson, and we had a computer teacher, but he would take them and teach them and then send them back, kind of thing. It was more of a special, but I didn't really use technology until I got to Beale at all. I really didn't use it.
So in those early years at Beale, what were some of the things that you were doing with your students?
Well, we were the first. Because it was fifth grade, we were the first to get computer carts.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there was only 12 computers in the computer carts. So everything had to be pairs.
Mm-hmm.
But I tried my hardest to get them on computers as much as I could, even if it was just typing, teaching them how to type. And we would have them type their essays and then we would print them out. That's almost the extent of the technology at first, until we started getting our and this was an expeditionary learning school, so it would have been really helpful with the technology if I had had it more available. And then I started doing things like electronic posters and having the kids looking up on, I can't remember what we used. It was some place that you can go and find explorers, because that's what we were doing. And they would have to pick an explorer. They had to look up all the different things. They had to find a map of where they went. And then they had to cite all their sources and put their websites in and all of that. And we did that. I tried to do at least one project with technology a term, and to get them going in the right direction. We did PowerPoint slides for, I think that was American Revolution. They had to come up with one person that they were interested in, and they had to do PowerPoint slides on that. Trying to think back then, it was pretty primitive.
Comparatively.
Comparatively, so, yeah.
Sounds like it was cutting edge at the time. So.
It really was. We made books, and the kids got to bring home the whole book, and we scanned in pictures and had them do a whole thing on habitats, you know, anything we could try and think of. And because we were expeditionary learning, we had a lot more access to technology than most schools.
Awesome. So as we're jumping in time here, so pre-COVID, so that would be 2019, 2018, what were some of the things that you were doing with students? Because at that point you were, if I understand the whole timeline correctly, you were teaching science to multiple grades at that point.
I was the hands-on science teacher, K through five. And I had Discovery Ed was my favorite thing in the world because they gave us these snippets of, you know, you didn't have to watch a 30-minute video. You can watch a 5-minute video. Mm-hmm. And then Generation Genius came out, which blew my mind because we love Dr. Jeff. And then we love Doug and Mystery Science. And we use that a lot. At the beginning, because I was still learning the science curriculum. I only knew the fifth grade science curriculum. I didn't know any other. But I used as much hands-on materials as I could. So it was some technology, but because I was trying to grapple with so many grades, mm-hmm. it was hard to use the technology as far as the kids using the technology.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And I think even for me, just thinking back, like if I were in your position, there would be a lot of like introductory videos, like this is what we're going to learn about. Here's a quick video on the water cycle. And now we're going to go do some experiments and right. really get into it. Yep. Or like this is the life cycle of a butterfly or a frog. And like just kind of have like that, use that as kind of your introduction in your hook in. I could see that being, that's what I would have done. And it sounds like you probably did some similar things.
Yep.
So,
but then once remote learning hit, oh my goodness. First of all, I was in the living room of my house because my oldest son had moved back into our house the day before school started. I had an office all ready for me, but he moved home. So I was in the living room and I have two, I don't want to say teenagers, 19-year-old and a 26-year-old coming in and out of my house all hours of the day. So the door would slam and open and slam and open. We had to put a shower curtain with a moon in back of me because there's boys going in and out of the bathrooms with towels, which we decided was not a good idea for remote learning.
I wonder why that's not a great.
And especially my oldest child has tattoos head to toe. So, you know, when he's bald with the big beard, he's a little mm-hmm. scary looking to little kids, you know, and he's the sweetest kid. But, you know, so we put up the moon and then I set up a whole shelf of all different stuff. I started taking things out of the closet and I basically did hands-on from my screen at home, and I put on Dojo what we were gonna need for that week for our experiments so the parents could go and get them. And sometimes I went grocery shopping with the parents because they would say, is this it? Is this what we need? And they would take pictures and send them to me. And I would say, you know, so I did as much as I could, or sending the kids to the kitchen and say, you need a spoon, and you need a plate and you need this and you need that, whatever we needed for the day, and then give him 5 minutes and he'll have them come back. But I ended up switching back to my good friend, the PowerPoint. And I started making PowerPoints for all of my units for all my lessons to keep them straight. And I inserted all of the videos that we're going to be using, all the materials, all of the any paperwork, because you couldn't use paper anymore. So I would take the handouts, make a picture, which I did not know how to do. And my son helped me, and put them on the PowerPoints. And then this wonderful thing came out called Nearpod.
Mm-hmm.
And so our principal bought it for us and encouraged us strongly to use it. And at first, of course, I'm not one more thing, not one more thing, but I found out how easy it was to take things and put it on Nearpod and use the Flowcabulary, which is fantastic. And I would make these huge Nearpod presentations for every single thing that I had to do. And except for kindergarten's really hard, but except for kindergarten, the kids had figured it out really well. And I used Nearpod and the kids were able to write right on the screen, and I was getting feedback. They were getting feedback in real time, and it was more engaging because they're not just sitting there watching a PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. And that really, really, really helped me a lot.
Yeah, I love Nearpod. And I was actually, the whole strange story with Nearpod in this district was back in 2018, I started pushing to try to get Nearpod for the district and moving mm-hmm. towards it. And we had meetings. There was a meeting in January of 2020. Is we had a Nearpod rep come to central office, and I kept like kind of pushing and trying to push it along. And then the pandemic hit, and it was like, this is what we need. This is what. So I was very pleased to see that became more widely adopted. And then I know for this year, the entire district has access to Nearpod. So
unfortunately, they got rid of Discovery Ed in the process, which was a little bit of a shame, even though you can find more things on YouTube. But that Discovery Ed is just an incredible site.
Yeah, I know, like with budget stuff, it's always like it's either this or that. And so.
And there's a lot of things that are on Nearpod, a lot of videos and that kind of things that people can adopt. But once you have put everything together, it's hard to redo that again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it takes so much time because I'll tell you, I think I was working like 7 o'clock in the morning till 7 or 8 o'clock every single night, not taking a lunch, not leaving my computer for 12 hours a day at least. And it was worse when I was at home. I worked more at home than I think I ever worked before.
Yeah, I think that's true for all of us because it's one of those things where, like, depending on where you have your office, mm-hmm. like for me at first, because we actually bought and sold a house during the pandemic, but in our previous house, my office was about 2 feet from my bed. So it'd be one of those things where you'd wake up at like 6 o'clock in the morning and you'd kind of go about your morning, and then 7 o'clock rolls around, you're already working, even though it's an hour before you're supposed to.
Right. And I'm normally here at 7 o'clock every morning,
mm-hmm.
but I'm a 3:30, got to go, you know?
Yeah, and that's much harder at home. So, cause it's like, where are you going to go? The kitchen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the other thing with Nearpod too, is you could actually take all those PowerPoints that you had made and just drop them in and then add all the other interactive stuff as you're going about. So that's another way to like kind of use everything.
It took me about three or four hours for every single one. So I take the PowerPoint, I make the PowerPoint, take the PowerPoint, put it on the Nearpod, insert all of the videos, all of the links, all of the drawn slides and the Flowcabulary link and the time to climb, if you don't do time to climb at the end, they have a fit. Because that was their favorite thing, that and Kahoot from Generation Genius. They have a Kahoot at the end of each Generation Genius, and those are the favorite things. Even the kids that don't participate normally were participating in those. So yes, but it's about 3 or 4 hours to do one because I did it for the entire unit, which is about 2 weeks, but six grades.
So before we run out of time here, because this has been a lot of fun, with being back in person now, What are some of the, are you still using Nearpod? Do you still use the PowerPoint? Are you completely back to hands-on? Like, because I know that there are still, like, while I'm not in a school right now, I still know that schools have some very strict rules that they're supposed to follow. Where are you falling in that? Because I would, if I were teaching science, I would want to be hands-on. But you also said that you're now moved to the computer science side of it. So
I'm doing the PowerPoints to keep me in line, to keep me knowing where I am. I am not doing Nearpod right now because I think right now it's just too overwhelming with everything. And I'm trying to get them, if they're going to go on the computer, it's going to go be for a very specific purpose for computer science, not for Nearpod. You know what I mean? So, and because I need them to practice actual writing with physical writing, they haven't done that in such a long time, and physical drawing, which they haven't done, that I am using I'm using the PowerPoints. But I'm not, I am not using the Nearpod anymore just because I have so much right now on my plate. And I'm trying to adopt as much as I can the correct way that I will maybe bring it up later. But right now, PowerPoint is pretty good.
Yeah. So with, because, so what made you take on the computer science role? Because I imagine your principal had to ask you to do that instead of maybe, that's what I'm thinking at least, that maybe you didn't necessarily sign up for it, but you were asked to do it. So what made you agree to it?
Yeah, I loved the science position. I loved it. But what happened was it was actually a previous principal had me do the science, and I was an intervention, but the funding came out for the CS position. And because of the pandemic, we needed another interventionist. So it worked out with the fact that I got the grant to be able to do this. And my principal was able to use the position that I had and put in a interventionist. And so I was the logical choice. I was the tech person anyway. I was the tech coordinator anyway. And as long as I was not a classroom teacher, I am okay with whatever you need me to do. But I'm not in love with intervention. So it was, yeah. And it was a shock to me because I really, really love the science. And but I'm okay with it. I'm really okay with that. I'm still learning, just like everyone else. And I was part of the CS for All group. And I did last year a club after school with the CS kids. So I was the logical choice.
Well, that's great. And I was actually just going to ask about the CS for All. And since you were a part of that, when it comes to the CS and like having the BeeBots and the Makey Makeys, and I think hummingbirds are now starting to come into schools. I don't know if you guys have them or not.
Yeah, we have everything.
You have everything. Is there anything that you're really excited to like do with the students out of like, not just those, but there's others that I'm not listing either. So.
Well, right now I'm excited for it all. You know what I mean? I can't wait to get their hands on things. And even code.org is what I have been using because it's very easy. It is very comprehensive for me. And it goes really in order for the kids. There's a whole thing on digital citizenship for each grade. And so I have been using code.org, and I'm going to be jumping into the modules pretty soon as well. Like using Angry Birds to get them to know algorithm is just what an amazingly smart idea. And Ice Age and, you know, all the things that the kids love. And my favorite thing right now is that they're pair programming. So the kids are able to work together, both get credit, but have to talk about what they're learning. And it is such a smart, smart idea. But as far as the rest, I can't wait to break them out. I mean, they're sitting in boxes waiting for me. And I will be doing it very slowly because I don't want to overwhelm myself.
I would definitely suggest that. So,
but I can't wait for everything. I'm trying to do it as slowly as I can, but getting excited, I move ahead of myself a little bit.
I think that's true for all of us whenever we get excited about something. Mm-hmm. And I do love code.org. I think it is a great program. And what's nice too, is if your students go through and complete all the code.org for elementary by the time from K to five, when they hit middle school is actually using code.org's CS discoveries, which is like the next step up. So it'll be it's one of the things I wish all curriculum was like in the district, where it kind of went linearly. There we go. We'll both get there. But I like that with the CS stuff, we're really pushing to be linear in the learning so that it helps it stick and is more effective. So, well, I know we're just about out of time, but I don't want to leave without this question. When it comes to being a teacher, as we've kind of even discussed here, we spend many hours, many more than we probably should for our health, working. So one of the things that I learned through the digital learning playbook, that first chapter in it is all about teacher self-care and being able to do things for yourself. So what are some things over this last couple of years now that you've been doing to help take care of yourself?
Well, one of the things that I do is I leave my computer at school during the week. I'll bring it home on the weekends because sometimes my husband works and I'll do something on Saturday or Sunday. And some of it's relaxing, putting those PowerPoints together. I don't find... they're just relaxing for me. I don't know. It's just like coloring or whatever other people do. I spend a lot of time with my family. And I take my parents out to breakfast every other Sunday with my son. And my older kids are working a million hours, so they don't get to come as often. But I try as hard as I can to just forget about school. Until it's 3 o'clock in the morning, because that's when it comes back to me. But, you know, I try as hard as I can that when I'm home, I'm home. When I'm at school, I'm at school. And I use every hour at school to be productive so that on my weekends, they're actually my weekends.
I was going to say, that's awesome. That's a great way to kind of think about everything, because it's very easy. I'm sure it'd be very easy to be like, oh, I didn't get to all that grading today. I'm just going to grab my laptop and take it home with me and sit down and put on a TV show and just let that be some background noise while I do this. So being able to do that.
It's very easy because you know you have so much to do. I mean, I have six grades. I've only gotten three or four lessons in PowerPoints or the modules. I have this lesson and this lesson. It's very easy to continue and keep going until they're all done because I'm that person. As you can see in back of me, everything's color coded. So, you know, I'm a very organized person, but, you know, you have to quit it. At some point, you have to say that's enough and take some time for yourself.
That's awesome. So I'm sorry, I do have one last question because my family and I do enjoy going out to breakfast. Do you have a favorite place?
We're trying to find one. We like Crackle Barrel, but my father has hearing aids, so he can't hear well because it's too noisy in there. We went to IHOP last week, but it was too long of a wait. And my son works in Ludlow, so we go before he has to go to work, so it can't be too far. My parents love Sylvester's in Northampton. That's their favorite, but it's too far for him to get from there to work. So we're still looking for a place.
Still looking. And I like Sylvester's. So
yeah, but Friendly is closed for breakfast. They're not open anymore for breakfast.
Oh, wow.
I know.
That's a little shocking, actually. Yeah, I know. We're all, for my family, we're all about, there's a place in Granby called the Early Mug that we would go to a lot. when we lived in South Hadley. Now that we live out in Blandford, there's a place in Chester called Carms.
Oh yeah, I know where that is.
Which is really great. So
yeah, I lived in Chester in college.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I live in Blandford now. So
yeah, I worked at the Russell Inn.
Oh, we get takeout from the Russell Inn every so often when we want pizza. So
you would be silly not to. It's a fantastic restaurant.
Anyways, it's been a lot of fun. I know that you probably got to get back to your day. And I'm sure that when my email closes, probably 30 people asking about progress reports. So thank you again for spending some time with us.
No problem. Thank you for asking.
Thank you again, Lori, for this great interview. And she's currently at Beal, although I don't know for how much longer, as more principals hear this and be like, hey, I want to try to headhunt her into our school because of how awesome she is and all the great things going on in the classroom. And if you didn't catch it, we did have a great little conversation right at the end about breakfast places. Let us know your favorite breakfast place, as we're always looking for great places to go in my family, and it sounds like with Lori's family too. So with all the awesome things going on, thank you, Lori, for taking some time out and talking with us. Thank you again for spending some time with us in this episode. If you liked this episode, wherever you are listening to the podcast, please go out, rate, review, and let us know what you think. Make sure that you're also sharing and subscribing to the podcast so you can always be up to date with the latest episodes. And if you like it, please share it out, because that's how it helps the podcast grow. It helps us reach a wider audience because, well, Springfield teachers are awesome and everybody needs to know that. And we are one of the awesomest districts. Awesomest? I'm going to go with awesomest. That sounds like a fun word. In a couple of weeks, we have another great interview coming up. I have been editing it as I'm recording for this one. And with that, I am Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy, and this is the SPS Digital Learning Hour. Digital Learning Hour is written, directed, produced by Mike Thomas from Digital Learning over at Springfield Public Schools Central Office.